Hello. ¿Y cómo dijo? ¿Y cómo fue? Chompita Cónico, say yes, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here.
¿Y cómo dijo? ¿Y cómo fue? Chompita Chronicles, say yes, I'm here, I'm back. Chompita Chronicles de temporada 4. Acuérdate, y antes que empecemos este podcast, dale, presiona la notificación, dale follow, dale 5 estrellas. Cuando escuches este podcast, deja tu review. Y yo siempre estoy activa en social media, en Instagram. Ya tú sabes cómo es la cosa, pero ya yo voy a dejar de hablar porque yo tengo un súper gran invitado. Nada más. Y nada menos, Manuel Méndez, a.k.a. conocido como el hijo nativo, we finally got here. Él tiene un podcast que se llama Las Caritas Lindas, pero he's doing so many great things for the community en el DMV. Pero, Manuel, explícanos, ¿qué es el DMV?
El DMV es D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Pero mi nombre es Manuel Méndez. My name is Manuel Méndez. I am originally from the Dominican Republic, born in the Dominican Republic and raised in Washington, D.C., Columbia Heights. Ese soy yo.
Él está súper bien, ok. So, dinos un poquito de ti, como dice, te criaste, pero tu background es dominicano, pero, you know, how were you brought up? I'm not going to, like, you know, tell me, like, in a microversión, how you became with this amazing gift awareness about the community. Well, starting when you were small.
So, you know, I was born in Dominican Republic. My mom is from San Pedro Macorís, where I would spend a lot of my time at the beach. It got to a point that I wanted to come to the United States. My grandparents were already here. They came, early 60s, 50s.
Right.
To Washington, D.C. And I wanted to be with my grandparents because I love my grandparents. And so that was the reason why I wanted to come to Washington. But here, Chocolate City really embraced me.
That's all they call that area, the boroughs?
Yeah, Chocolate City. Washington, D.C. is Chocolate City. It's known as Chocolate City. Right now, it's more like, what do you call it? Not Chocolate City, but...
It has changed a lot, the makeup.
Yeah, more vanilla than chocolate.
Caramel.
It's a little pockets of chocolate chips and a whole bunch of vanilla right now. Washington, D.C. is known as Chocolate City. And so when I came here, I came when I was really young. And, you know, the community, the African-American community, yes, really embraced me, cherished me, and nurtured me. And so I get the majority of the values that I have and principles from what I learned from elders in the community. As time grew past, you know, I became an activist in the community. There was things that I wanted to solve in the community.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you were with your grandparents. I'm very close to my grandmother myself. So, you know, I feel you on that one. But, okay, so this is you, like, a teenager. You were in high school. You were seeing what was going on.
So I was in a group that was called Youth Action Research Group. And I was very active in my high school years. And one of the things that we were concerned during when I was a youth in high school was affordable housing. And so we went around because we saw that that was one of the main things that affected young people in our school.
Right.
Our parents were full-time and a part-time and another part-time to make sure that, you know, they had, you know, money for rent, for food,
survive.
Survival, exactly. And so We fought for affordable housing for young people and for adults. And so,
wow, this is you already. You were finishing high school, or you were still in high school?
Beginning of like freshman high school.
Wow.
Yeah. And so in high school, I did a lot of that. I met a whole bunch of elders that I still connect to this day. Like Arturo Griffith, like Roland Roback, like, well, so many
right.
Elders that I connected with during my younger years are, you know, we're fighting off issues of Afro-Latinidad today. So it really connects my years of activist in high school to what I'm doing today. After high school, I must say after high school, I wanted to go to an activist school.
Yeah.
So I went to PWI, predominantly white institution in Yellow Springs, Ohio, called Antioch College. And there I also studied documentary. That's my trade. And right. I am a trained documentarian. And so that's why when you see Caras Lindas podcast, you see a little bit of video and audio. And so, yeah.
There's another project that you have going on. And then how did you land it on NPR? Who reached out to vote?
NPR? Like, I did not know I was on NPR.
Yes. Like, your information comes a lot. Like,
and you was,
yes. You're recognized.
I have not heard once that I was even referenced in NPR.
Yes, so our reference. So, yeah, look it up. I'm like, yeah, your you know, your body of work is recognized.
And
you know, when you do this work, you know, it's like the horses. You know, you have these focus, and so you just grinding and doing the work. You're not really looking to the side to see what is being referenced. My job is to, you know, improve the lives of Afro-Latinos in the DMV and try to make it a little bit better than what than what it is in
right.
terms of representation.
I'm looking up at your page and I want to tell you, yeah. And I was like, oh my God. So yes. And you have been like, you know, they have mentioned your work. They have mentioned your body and where they mentioned your events. I'm glad that I'm saying this to you, but
yeah, this is
the most insightful thing that I learned out from you right now. I didn't know that there was an activist program or how you go about, you know, navigating, you know, the politics or legislatures or changes that you want to see in the community. That is, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so I started that during my younger years, and it really added up to, because sometimes people feel like we come from left field, like mm-hmm. we come out of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
but it's really like nuestro sancocho bien lento, you know, it
brews.
Our essence is like really like slowly brew. Anytime someone sees something that's really fast and quick, microwavable, I don't think we should trust. So I've been nurtured by the community, watered, and then, you know, whatever I have flowered to is I attribute it to the community contributions that they have placed in me. You know what I mean?
Right. So I always do this question, but I'm like, when do you realize that you're like, okay, I'm Black. I know that I'm Black, but then it's like, I'm not going to be treated any different than a Black American or an African American. Like, no está afectando, les afecta a ellos, pero también nos está afectando a nosotros. Because at the first thing, before I open my mouth, this is what they see.
Right. For me, it's been from really early. Like I said, like Chocolate City has been a blessing to me because I saw clear examples of reflection of my family in the community. And so I couldn't say other than the language, right? Or the food, which we have, you know, mutually embraced. I have embraced African-American food, and my friends have embraced Dominican food. And it's similar. I talk a lot about, when I talk to African-Americans, I talk a lot about New Orleans. And I talk about, you know, the food in New Orleans and how similar it is. And the Caribbean, it's basically New Orleans is part of the Caribbean. I'll also talk about Hoppin' John. I don't know if you know what Hoppin' John is. It's their version of, it's black eyed peas and rice.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know,
I heard it, yeah.
Hoppin' John's, that's what it's called.
That's how they call it. And I haven't had the opportunity to be out there, but I've heard, like, you know, like, I always say, look at our food. There's history there that tells you a lot, everything.
And African-Americans eat it during New Year's. Hoppin' John's.
Yes.
Pick it up.
Black Eyed Peas. Okay, yeah. So one more question. Like I said, people call this period for us a movement. Un despertar, a renaissance. Where were you, you know, when the George Floyd murder took place? What were your thoughts, your feelings?
I was watching it the same way everybody was watching it when, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like 8 minutes, you know what I mean? I think everybody during the pandemic had an opportunity to just watch those 8 minutes. And it felt like a lynching. It felt like, you know what I mean? Like a modern lynching. And so it really affected all of us.
Yes.
But I think for some reason, I think people think like before George Floyd and after George Floyd and the things that have changed. I'm more suitable after Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
You know, and after, because something really ignited, and to see someone kill a young person is definitely like you just chopping up like the fruits of a family. And so I think about George Floyd a lot. I also think about Sandra Bland a lot.
Yes.
You know, like at any point in time, you know, as we drive in these, you know, highways and streets, you can be stopped.
Yes.
And, you know, your life can change. Well, at any moment as a black person in America, your life can change. And so I think about, you know, different instances of like where, you know, driving while black, being in places while black. I remember the Starbucks case of the two black men in Starbucks. So there's many cases, but we all had a moment to sit and pay attention to George Floyd versus the other one. The other ones, you know, we had lots of distractions, and the pandemic really gave us, you know, gave us that, you know, that moment that is not just COVID, you know, there's a pandemic of like serious white supremacy in the United States.
And then obviously that was like the moment that they say, okay, you know, you know that it was like a Pandora box just opened. Y después nos hicieron. ¿Y qué pasó con, like, suddenly? ¿Y los negros o los latinos que son negros o afro-latinos en Latinoamérica? Like, it was so impactful that it transcended to Europe, to Latin America, like everybody to look at themselves. Y verdaderamente, like, it was this elephant in the room. Like, so I don't know about you, but reporters reach out to me. People were, like, want to get bites and information.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always Univision, Telemundo. Always, incluso like, I was on Univision during the George Floyd.
They wanted to buy, you know, a piece.
The funeral, and during that same it was so impactful because during the funeral previous to when I got on, that was I was so confused because in San Francisco there was a young man that was killed by police, Latino.
Yes.
I don't know if it was San Francisco or LA, and it was just like, man, like it just don't matter. It don't matter. Some Latinos need to recognize that it really just don't matter. Like when they don't see you as a human being, like when another human being don't see you as another human being, and that being a police officer, you're in real danger.
Yes.
And then when it comes to Latin America, you know, I always think of Marilyn Franco from Brazil.
Yes, yes.
That's, you know what I'm saying?
Like that is
think about
the layers. Yes.
I think about Berta Cáceres in Honduras.
Yes.
I think about the folks in Colombia, the Afro-Latinos in Colombia that on a regular basis are threatened to be killed.
Francia Marquez,
that whole crew of folks that I think about the Garifunas.
Yes.
In Central America. I think a lot about Panama, too. I think a lot about Colón.
I know. Yes. Yes.
And the disparities.
The disparities. But this is like, it seems that it's a force that is beyond us that is going to be happening, even though they are, you know, pushing it back. And it's like, no, this is going forward regardless if you like it or not.
Yeah, it's global white supremacy that really started in the Americas, right?
Mm-hmm.
What global white supremacy, I mean, it started in, you know, what we call Spain, but we Black Latinos were the first folks to really have be affected, impacted by global white supremacy through slavery. Well, people don't talk about the Middle Passages. Through the Middle Passages, when we landed in the Americas, when they shipped our cousins to the United States, because you have to understand the Caribbean was a port to disperse enslaved Africans. And so some people don't acknowledge that.
Yeah.
So it's been there. But also stuff that folks don't talk about, like the resistance, right? Like,
yes.
We've been resisting, like, you know, people talk about Black Lives Matter, you know.
La rebelión, that's all it is.
Our people been fighting for centuries against global white supremacy and whatever you want to call it, colonialism, imperialism, whatever you want to, what word you want to use it, that's on you. You know, but we're calling it white supremacy.
All right. So we are going to go now. I'm going to edit this. So I'm going to ask you. No, yeah.
You're going to have to.
I'm going to. Don't worry. So now we're going to talk about the caucus, how you came about it, how you, the, you know, leader, do you, you know, how you, I believe that you have an event coming. Hopefully that the legacy of Claudia Jones.
Yeah, Claudia Jones. Wow. During the McCarthy era, she is the only person to be deported from the United States. Claudia Jones. I hope that people read a little bit more about Claudia Jones and the work that she had done. What are the big reasons why there is a big festival in Britain, Caribbean festivals, because of Claudia, the influence of Claudia Jones. Well, she got deported to Britain. And so there she is, that along with the Caribbean community there, if people know about, you know, the Caribbean festivals that happen during June and July, you know, because the Caribbean month is coming up. And so
yes.
Folks celebrate the Caribbean heritage. Claudia Jones is a person that all Caribbean people need to know and hear in her words.
I want to talk to you. So how do you care about the caucus? You know, is it the only chapter that you only have? Is this particular just for D.C. or is it expanding? What's going on with that?
Well, the caucus is right now is only in the DMV. And it started because we wanted a voice. We wanted to be. I usually talk about like wherever Latinidad is being spoke about. Afro-Latinos, Black Latinos, and Indigenous folks need to be in those spaces. And so that is the impetus for this work with the DC Afro-Latino Caucus, because we need to be in those spaces, making decisions about our community.
Yes.
Being a representation, being represented, being in on the table, talking about issues of employment, issues of immigration, issues of racism, issues of all down the line, all the issues that Latinos love to talk about, Afro-Latinos are affected by those things too. Undocumented immigrants, there's tons, you see it, Haiti, how the treatment of Haiti versus the treatment of Ukrainians and how.
Right, right. Now that you mentioned that, I have really, you know, mixed feelings about that for what I'm hearing for the headlines. I'm like, guys, I know that Chombita Chronicles is always like, it's an uplifting moment, but we have to talk about the hard issues. And I feel that, and I can definitely share this with you, Manuel. Is like, are you telling me they're skipping line or they're skipping before the other people that are been waiting for an answer? And at the border in Mexico, and I know for a fact because it's been already news, they're already here in the United States. They are getting assistance and help. And I'm like, wait a minute.
It's a perfect example of how there's a crisis in, you know, in Western Europe or Eastern Europe, and the color of Ukrainians versus Haitians, yeah. And the treatment that Haitian babies, Haitian families, Haitian women, we have to vocalize these things and make sure that folks hear it, but also do something about it too, like. You know what I'm saying? De boca, nosotros podemos hablar, so we're blue.
Exactly.
But we need to really do something about the inequalities, the disparities when it comes to these policy, this immigration policy that, you know, and I get on Latino organization too about not addressing, not pinpointing and not making sure that, you know, our Black immigrant community really to be in the forefront of their issues too.
I'm with you. I'm with you in that sense because I'm like, I don't have nothing personally against, you know, war, and I cannot conceive. I'm talking about from the side of humanity. Humanity, you know, it's the right to, you know, to ask and require asylum. You know, and everybody, you know, now they say there's a policy that they say that there was another, I guess, headline saying that they really highly recommend that they apply from Europe, do not come to the United States in time. But I'm like, you already have 30,000 people already here. How they got here? I'm like, somebody put them on a plane. Like,
no, and also just the images, like Biden going to Ukraine, holding a baby, a white baby, white toddler. But when it comes to Haiti, I mean, it's just so distant, so, you know, far away from, you know, what their stance should be. If a country is, you know, unstable, in their community is fleeing.
They don't even have a president.
Right. So and if they come into the border, why we're not being as considerate as we are with Ukraine? No, we stop them with horses, you know. So it's amazing to see it, but also to see the voices who stay silent about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. As we said, well, this is a conversation that was here documented. We spoke about it. We're going to continue, you know, with presence like, you know, your cause, my cause, because we have to say something. I definitely want to now segue to a highlight, you know, because we do this for a reason. You are a documentary, and I believe that I don't have the name of the person that you did, but you really went viral with a professor, Boricua.
Oh, you're talking about Joanna Fernandez.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man, I love Joanna.
That conversation went like.
Really? I did not know that either. You know, tú sabes cuando.
Uno hace su trabajo, pero I'm here to give you your flowers, whichever, you know, your recognition. Like, people are listening, it's going through, it's coming through. I'm learning with you.
Joanna Fernandez in the Young Lords book. I mean, you know, again, it's like full circle, because our organization, as a young person, the Youth Action Research Group, we mirrored the Young Lords. We wanted to have the same impact as the Young Lords in terms of like what they did. And to interview Joanna, who studied Doctora Joanna.
Yes, that's true.
Hay que darle respeto a la Doctora Joanna.
Yes.
Who spent 10 years trying to tell this story, right? It's amazing. And I think everybody should buy Dr. Joanna Fernandez's book, The Young Lords. It's a beautiful book. It tells the story of Afro-Latinidad struggling in el barrio. And Latinos, the white Latinos, joining and combating white supremacy within our communities and having impact from the medical bill, the medical bill that comes out of the Young Lords taking over a hospital, the trash can campaign. Their work with youth, their work in colleges, and their leadership. I mean, we are on this. I mean, they are on our shoulders. Like,
yes.
they definitely are an example for all Afro Latinos.
Awesome. So my last question. Tell me something like, you know, if you would have known, que tu hubieras querido en este momento, como digo, this, if I would have had this when I was young, you know, I would have felt so much different. All the things that I went through in corporate, that, you know, I believe that people were like, I don't know, no me estaban tratando mal, but it was, well, yes, it was microaggressions now that we call it. But, you know, that sense of that you don't belong to a space, but actually you do. How can you express that in like inspiring, motivating, or saying, you know, how you overcome and now we are here to stay, see us, you know, how can you let know the community, that young boy or girl, or, you know, winning dominations, how you pull through, how you represent?
Hey. It's really difficult when you win in those spaces where like those microaggression or to really inspire and say like, you can do this. But for me, it's been my community has been the one that have told me, no, ten cuidado que te está pensando. You got to do X, you know, because we need you to do X. That support, that guidance, even at my lowest, it has been the community who have seen the potential in me, mm-hmm. not necessarily me seeing my potential, because when we're down, we don't see, you know, how great we can be. When we're down, we just, you know, we short-sighted. And it's really been the community who have inspired me to do what I have done, but what to come is what I'm very excited to. So I think plantando tus pies en la comunidad, you know, it's and when the community believes that you are worthy,
yes,
then you're gonna do anything, no matter what. No matter any of the limitations that you may have, you're going to do it, because when you have a community supporting you, there's nothing that will stop you. And that counts at least 10 people or 5 people or 3 people just encouraging you to do, that see something that you're doing that is dope, and they encouraging you. I mean, and I've been blessed and fortunate to have those people. Mi mamá le dicen los ángeles. We have had angels, you know what I mean, that have really guided you through the way. And I've been really fortunate. Even at my worst, they have, you know, lifted my head up. So plant yourself in the community. And
awesome. So with that being said, mi gente linda, hermosa, fabulosa, thank you, Manuel, for being here. I'm going to close out. And you know how you say it. I'm closing out. Hasta la próxima edición. Y como dijo, y como fue, Chombita Chronicles, we are out.